Hello again, Friartown, and welcome to another edition of Friar Pod. I am Chris Torello, and I'm of course joined tonight by Danny Mack and Daniel James. Danny James, how we doing tonight, Warrior Friar?
Good. How we doing tonight?
Doing all right. Thank you very much. And Friartown Mayor, how we doing coming off of election season?
What up? What up? Sitting, looking outside at the snow at Friartown. Means basketball's coming.
Absolutely, and in basketball, indeed, we are in full swing. Madness has passed. The two exhibition games are there. We will get to that, but we do have some news on the recruiting front. We begin there, and then we move along to some roster updates, and we'll take you right up through the Puerto Rico tip-off. So, Danny James, how about you kick us off?
Well, early word is that we're going to be getting some good news out of the Brandon Austin camp, from what I understand, to round out our 2013 recruiting class. One of the best players we can possibly land at this point in the game would be a great addition, can play the 1, 2, and the 3, and it looks like he may be picking us. So, guys, what do we think about that? The potential of Landon Cooley's sixth top 100 player, if you count the transfers.
Well, he's 71st overall on the ESPN 100 list. It would solidify another pretty good recruiting class. 6'6", 180 pounds out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Originally was going to Penn State University, and I think this would be a great pickup. He did visit Providence a little bit earlier, right around the time of Madness. He was out with UConn. Jim Calhoun was sitting next to him for those 2 days. He did go out to a former Providence coach, Rick Barnes, in Texas. He's receiving offers from all up and down the East Coast. Penn State still has an offer out to him. Temple as well has been pretty strong on him. But I'll tell you what, guys, if we can pick this kid up, I think it's another option at the three. I like the way he plays. I haven't watched too many tapes on him, but just talking with the coaching staff, getting a feel for what some people around Friartown are saying about this kid. He's got tremendous upside already, on top of the fact that he is already one heck of a talented player. He's got great size and great length, and I really believe that this would be a terrific pickup.
All right.
Yeah, I think another thing that they're looking at with Brandon is that he's going to be someone that can get to the hoop. Chris Dunn can do that as well, but he's just bigger and more physical than Dunn is going to be. And they say his weakness so far is his streaky shooting ability, mm-hmm. which kind of worrisome. It's just like, oh, is this another Gerard Coleman, that top 100 recruit, someone that can slash and get to the hoop, but has trouble hitting down like the mid-range shot. But it looks like he has good length and he has good size, which Gerard was coming in. He was a little undersized. So I think this would be a great get, and someone that has obviously already proved by the other schools looking at him that he's a high-level recruit and not someone that's flying under the radar.
Now, guys, does this interest either of you in the fact that I really believed we were looking at someone more in the lines of a point guard, a true point guard? You're losing Vincent Council, arguably the best point guard in the Big East. Ed Cooley is advocating that he's the best point guard in the nation. The fact that we're going after a 6'6 small forward, someone with the body type of a Ricky Lito, he can cross over the ball, he can dribble through the paint. Like Danny said, yeah, maybe the streaky shooting can affect him, but are you guys a little surprised at all?
I mean, I think he's very capable of playing like that point forward role. Especially now, you see guys. It's just size, it really isn't an issue anymore with these kids. I mean, all of them can handle the ball, and all of them can have the offense. If they're this good, all of them can have the offense run through them. They're used to it because that's what they did in high school. So he's definitely capable of playing either off the ball, that he would probably be more accustomed to here, or backing up Dunn if, say, Dunn got in foul trouble or something like that.
The key with this guy is it adds depth, and not just depth where, like, oh, you know, we got a great starting five and then everything kind of falls to crap after that. It's that we're adding quality at the one, the two, and the three. So if Lito's having a rough game next year, if Cotton can't, hold the point down when Dunn needs a rest, if, we move Cotton to the two and Dunn needs a rest, or if Fortune, needs a break, or Bullock, and, this guy could outwork all of them and earn his own starting role, because that's, one of the fundamental things about Ed Cooley is he's not going to start you based on what your top 100 ranking was. So, like, oh, you were a 75, but Dunn was a 23, so Dunn's automatically going to start. It's going to be competitive in practice, and it's going to be earning those minutes. I think that this is going to help our guys who are already incredibly talented push themselves even further to keep on to those starting minutes and those, you know, those 25, 30 minutes a game that they're going to be, you know, getting should things go well. But I think the key here is depth. I think it was Jamie Dixon a few years ago who said that if you want to compete in the Big East and win and be in the upper echelons year in and year out, you need to have talent at every position all throughout your roster. It can't just be, you know, we got a couple of talented guards, but our front court is kind of crap and, you know, we'll just get by on that. Like, you need talent everywhere, and that's what Cooley is doing. I mean, one of the biggest debates on Scout that I saw from this is, well, where is this kid going to get the minutes from? And it's not about the minutes. It's about, you know, who's going to be stepping up to the challenge. Those are the people who are going to get the minutes. I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about anything, to be honest. What I'm curious about is, you know, how this is going to push Dunn in practice, how this is going to push Leto in practice, or Fortune, or even Henton, who can move to the three, even though Cooley has said that he wants to keep Henton at the four. You know, this gives us so many matchup opportunities and matchup problems for the other team. And it also gives us so much talent in the depth chart that it doesn't really matter who's starting at that point, because we're going to be having the talent to win not only in our starting five, but throughout our lineup.
Go ahead, Danny.
Okay, I was just reading on ESPN how Adam Finkelstein over the summer said Brandon Austin is definitely going to be a player to watch. He said that his length and size is virtually unmatched in the backcourt. He's grown into his body over the summer and is playing with much more athleticism than he did a year ago, and he's filling out his frame, which is always like a great thing to have. A player to come in is ready to play right away, and someone that's going to be able to hold his own in practice and against Big East teams, and not someone that's you're going to have to work with over the time. Not saying that he's not going to have to work in practice, but someone that's going to be able to come in and be able to play Big East caliber basketball right away.
Yep.
You know, just going back to, you know, Warrior Fryer's point about, you know, about Jamie Dixon, you know, coach at Pitt. I mean, we all remember when Pitt came in number one in the nation back in 2009. And what happened? They had an off night, but they were also – they didn't have the best depth. They had DeJuan Blair down low, and, yes, he ended up playing in the NBA. But, you know, he got into foul trouble. They didn't have the depth on the bench, and the Friars had a great night, and it was, you know, one of the best nights in Friar history. And so, you know, that's one thing. You need to have depth, and I completely agree with that. Here's another question, though, and I'm kind of – there's a little bit of pessimism when I say this in terms of Friar Town, but I really think us – you know, and again, we don't know if it's official. We don't know if Austin will indeed choose Providence. So everyone, you know, of course, hanging, you know, kind of on the edge of their seat with that. However, if the rumors are indeed true and things do work out, and we hope they do, 6'6", 180, he's got a similar build, a similar, you know, kind of game, the way he plays. It's kind of similar to another guy on the team right now who can't play. And I'm talking about Ricky Leto. Do you two think that there's any shot that this is a safety net in case Ricky Leto's tempted to not be here next year?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You always got to prepare for the potential of who's not coming back. And, you know, that's what Cooley's good at. He was preparing for the idea that Gerard and Dixon and all them might not be coming back after last year. He was already getting ready to replace him. You know, we had Ian Baker lined up just, you know, for when Gerard was going to drop the hat. So I think, you know, part of that is regarding whether or not Leto is going to come back. I do think that's heavily impacting this recruitment. I do think that's part of the appeal. It's like, well, if Leto goes, that's all the more spotlight for me. But even if Leto stays, it's a double-edged sword, where if Leto stays, you know, okay, Leto can play the two, you can play the three, you know, and you guys can play the ball together.
Oh, there's a ton of depth. I mean, you're looking at the backcourt. You know, I mean, it's already one of the best when next year rolls around, and you're gonna have Dunn at the, you know, a kind of a combo, and you're gonna ask him to be more of a one next year. You can have Cotton at both positions. Lito can play both positions. I mean, it's an opportunity to really go with what I think Ed Cooley wants more than anything, which is having those athletic 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", guards playing the 1-3 positions, and then really going after it with a guy like a LaDante Henton at the 4 and guys like Carson DeRozier, Sadiki Johnson at the 5. So it's really going to be intriguing, and I hope the news is true on this. And from all our sources, we've each been hearing our own little conversation on this.
I don't have any sources.
Okay, fine. I was just trying to be polite.
No, obviously, what Danny said, there's always a chance that Ricky doesn't stay next year, but I think that's just with any college student year by year. But I also think there's definitely something where Ed Cooley can go to a player like Brandon Austin and say, hey, look at who you're going to come here and play with. I mean, you could go somewhere else and play with other guards, but you're not going to find two guards in the country that can be able to play like with you like they were going to be able to next year. So I also think there's also a Ricky Lito being here factor that has to weigh in the back of the head of someone like Brandon Austin and think, wow, that would be a lot of fun. I could definitely see myself doing that or something along those lines instead of like, oh, I'm just going to go there because he's not going to be here. So I think it's just, like Danny said, a double-edged sword, and we can't predict the future, but yeah. So.
Good. I figured, and by the way, this does not mean we have had any inklings that Ricky Lito will not be here next year.
No.
I am still very confident that he will be here.
Yeah, I absolutely believe he'll still be around. I think he loves the school. I think he loves the city. He just got a tattoo. Did you guys see that? It was on Friar Blog's post a couple days ago of his tattoo of Providence. I mean, the kid lives and breathes the city. All right, moving on. We got two exhibitions now under our belt. We finally got to see the team compete against some opponents that weren't them. We had D2 Assumption come, and then we had D3 Rick Rhode Island College come in. So, you know, let's start with Assumption. Guys, what were your takeaways from the game?
Quick shout out to RJ Superfly's Assumption team. I know he went there.
Did he?
Yeah, that's for you, RJ.
All right. So anyways, Assumption, guys, talk to me about it.
Well, to be completely honest with you, and this is maybe a little too harsh. Well, first off, they played a hell of a lot better this year against Assumption than they did last year. I was fairly impressed with the way we were physical. I thought that our team had a different type of mentality going into this game. Like, they had something to prove, which is nice to see. I don't care what part of the year it is. But overall, I wasn't that impressed in terms of just the gameplay. I didn't think Assumption had the same fire that they brought last year. Cotton looked okay. Cotton had what, 22 points? I mean, he looked pretty good. But when it came to Council, maybe forced a few too many shots. I thought they played okay, but I wasn't overall impressed.
Really? I was pretty impressed. I thought they were looking, just Kadeem alone, the transformation that kid made from, what was it, last year, from when he debuted against Louisville, and then till now. I mean, the kid just, holy shit.
How many points did he have?
He racked up 18.
18 points?
Yep, 18.
How many minutes?
He had 30 minutes.
30 minutes. He did shoot eight of 14.
Yeah, but
he was playing against Assumption College.
Well, hold on though. Let's talk about his shot for a minute. His shot is smoother. It has a much better trajectory on it, and he's much more confident when he takes it. It's not the fact that he just went 8 of 14 against a D2 team. It's how he shot it. You know, he shot the ball, with I don't even know who I would compare it to, but just a very low trajectory. Right in the basket, hit off the back iron and bank it in, or he would go up and do a post move, which is something we've all been waiting for him to do. None of this step out behind the three-point arc and shoot that, like with the Keno ball. You get down low and you
Andrew
make
Bynum
a play.
Ball.
Andrew Bynum ball, Christ.
yeah.
So I mean,
he doesn't
that
have
alone.
The fro, though.
Yeah, he doesn't. He needs the fro. He should get a fro.
Okay. I mean, I give. Listen, Bats had a double double. 18 and 11. Fortune had 12. Cotton had 23. I thought there was more. I agree with you that there was. That I like the fact that Kadeem has more confidence. I completely agree with you, but for some reason it just wasn't like it wasn't that impressive. I don't know what I can't put my finger on it. Going through the stats again, I mean, only was at the line a few, you know, three times. He had 8 defensive rebounds. And he even had a couple of assists. I mean, so. It wasn't that I don't know what it was. I thought from the Mal Brown scrimmage, you know, because he did play against Siddiqui. He was able to play against those types of players, you know, the Carsons and those. It wasn't impressive. I wasn't happy with the way he played. Maybe he started with that injury there and he was hiding it. Who knows? But I wasn't. Yes, 18 and 11. If he can do that when the games matter. I will take it. I don't, you know, go after it. He took the most shots on the team, though. Is that something we're okay with?
Yes, as long as he hits them.
No, I'm not. He's not going to go 8 for 14.
Well, hold on. But let's also remember, though, that some of those were just like those were putbacks. You know, that wasn't just like he was stepping out shooting every time.
Yeah.
Some of those were, you know, because every time he puts the ball up one way or another, it counts as a shot for him. So some of those were. You know, put back. Some of those were post moves, so you can't compare that to something like, you know, Bryce Cotton, who only shot 10 times, but he still hit 7 of them. But you know, that's that, it's a little, it's too different.
On the line.
What's that?
It was incredible.
Bryce Cotton.
Yeah, I mean,
he
I
was
mean,
terrific.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, night in, night out, if Kadeem leads the team in shot attempts, this team is going to have some problems. When Big East play comes, but if he's rolling, you got to feed the big man, and I don't think Akuli has any problems with that, and I think hopefully the guards recognize that if a game happens where Kadeem is just feeling it and just is able to pound the glass and has a much smaller guy on him like he did this game, then obviously it's fine giving him the ball, but hopefully he is able to play like this against higher level opponents. But I don't think it's a good thing that he's taking the most shots on the team. If the season,
I agree with that completely.
If the season just wears on, it's kind of like the Russell Westbrook argument, where if he takes 4 shots, then Kevin Durant is your team going to win. But that's a whole different story.
Look, how about Bruce Cofani? I know he's only 4 for 4, but my lord, the kid looked like his hands could bend. I mean, they look like he could palm the ball.
They broke his fingers over the summer so he can move his fingers.
It was terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce Cofani has hands.
Bruce Cofani has hands. Thank Christ.
They bent. Bruce, he's finally got over his days of playing soccer and is now able to use his hands. Thank everyone. Thank you for the doctors that broke his fingers over the summer so now he can move them and catch the ball. So,
I want to give a question out to you guys, and I mean, we can certainly look at the box score and kind of go over the Rick game too, but I mean, LaDonte Hinton had 14 points over 32 minutes, 6 of 12 shooting, second most shots on the team, 50% shooting, 0 for 2 from behind the 3-point line, 2 for 5 from the charity stripe, 11 rebounds. That's all good, but I just don't think LaDonte's playing what we expect. Like, I don't think we're seeing what we expect from him.
I mean, that depends on what you expect from LaDonte. I think a lot of people are expecting him to play like he did against Villanova or, you know, that DePaul game. And it really is just like, well, it's still, he might just be playing to his opponent a little bit. Like, it's, you know, a lot of people were concerned with his performance both in Assumption and with Rick, from what I understand. But, I mean, an exhibition game is just to, you know, get the dust off, get the rust off the shooting arm and get back into the swing of things. And I think LaDonte is just trying to find his groove again and get back into, you know, the swing of it. He's a sophomore. He's still young. You know, he's not going to be able to jump in like Council or Cotton, who has, you know, a couple years more of experience than him, you know. So it's going to be... Yeah. where he's going to have a couple rough games at the beginning, I think. And that's fine. I'm okay with that. Especially because it's against, you know, it's on games that don't count. Let him, rather him find his groove here than against UMass. Let's put it that way.
I don't think he's going to struggle out of the gate. I just think it's a mindset of him in the early games not being the aggressor and just letting the game find him. Last year he was great when the game just came his way, and the ball found him, and he just did his thing. He doesn't have to be that type of I gotta go get this shot, I gotta go get that shot kind of player like Cotton and Council have to be. He's kind of the player that's going to be able to, the game comes to him. He's that good that the game comes to him, the ball finds him. And that's where he's going to thrive. So there's really not going to be a game this year where I'm going to sit there and be like, oh wow, what is LaDante doing? Because he will always make his stamp on the game, whether it's on offense or defense. The game will find him, the ball will find him, and I'm not worried about his production.
No, I think I can agree with that for the most part. Like I said, I think it's not only myself voicing concern, but also there's some loyal fans on Scout Friars that have been saying it, and so I just wanted to kind of get your opinion on that. I'm not too worried about him either.
No, I mean, over two games, he shot 50% from the field goal range. He didn't hit any threes, which is, you know, it's a little bit tougher to step back and hit the long ball when, you know, you're a sophomore, you're still getting acclimated, especially after a long summer. But I mean, overall, you know, you just look at his numbers. Yeah, he didn't play with the energy that we hoped, but it's still, you know, it's early. I think he'll step it up when we need him to, and he'll be, you know, that player that we saw last year, even better.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Let's hope so. Now, are we comfortable to move to the Rick game? Because I was the only one who was there, I believe, correct?
Yeah, I was in Kansas. I was just getting back from a football game. All these Twitter messages about how I should be lucky that I'm not at the PC game because it was atrocious. So, I mean, why don't you lead off with that?
Have at it, Hoss. It wasn't pretty. The first half was just – it was 25-24 in favor of Rhode Island College heading into the break. And, I mean, the second half, obviously, a 52-27 advantage for the Friars. That's terrific. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that our bench was still outscored by Rick 16-9. We even got outscored in the second chance points. I'm not saying that's a huge deal because it's only a two-point advantage for Rick. But I just – I mean, it was a very frustrating first half to watch. And actually what happened, I'll be very honest with you, Notre Dame came back in their football game. So I ended up sitting in the back room of the Dunkin' Donuts Center in the press room and watching that game. But I was thankful because it was so boring. It was 2-0 at the first media timeout. It was 2-0. There's a problem with that. There really is a problem with that. I didn't like the – I think Josh Fortune in the second half went off. He absolutely just he was 6 of 12 from behind the three-point line. I like the fact that he's shooting. He's comfortable. Ed Cooley made a comment that he loves exhibitions instead of scrimmages because it gets you in that game mentality, puts the players in the jerseys. But Josh Fortune took advantage of this tonight, and he was terrific. And, you know, shooting well, coming off the screens, I liked everything about that. And again, I was, you know, I really think LaDante played okay, only 7 points, 15.7 rebounds. But I'll tell you what, guys, you know, I think we're going to be okay in terms of the in terms of our backcourt this year.
Yeah, I'm not worried about our backcourt. Our frontcourt, you know, which we'll get to later in the show when we have some news on Siddiqui Johnson to share, but our frontcourt is what's going to be the determinant, I believe, in a lot of close games based on who we have available. Because, you know, our backcourt can shoot the ball. They can do what we need to do. But the Villanova game is a perfect example where we were leading by 19, and then one player in the front court took us out. And that was partly a fault at the level of talent we had at that time. That was a fault at the player who was guarding him, who I believe was Belial Dixon at the time. That was the fault of, you know, not making proper adjustments, and Cooley has taken responsibility for that. You know, he wasn't the kind of guy who would just hide behind his players and say, well, he should have done this. Like, no, Cooley stepped up and said, this was my bad. I wish I could have done, you know, a better coaching job at the second half of that game, you know, but it was a live-and-learn process, and I won't make that mistake again. That was great for him to say, and exactly what the fans need to hear. However, what we need to make sure that, you know, that solves one-third of the issue, we also need to make sure that we have the talent there to protect it, and we have the players involved to protect it, you know? So I agree with that. You know, I think our front court's going to make the difference in a lot of games, for better or worse.
And let me just say this real quickly. After the game, there was a small group, including Scott Fryer's Rich Corin, waiting to talk with Ed Cooley outside the locker room, as is pretty customary in an exhibition game. And we must have sat there waiting for about 20 minutes, because honest to God, and I talked with no one was allowed in there except coaches and Bob Driscoll. That was it. You know, no, there was no administrators. There was no, typical, maybe some high donors usually maybe I get to go in there, but there was none of that. They literally shut the door for 20 minutes, and Ed Cooley was just talking to the team. And so if that doesn't tell you what type of coach we have, he absolutely understands accountability. He buys into the fact that this team needs to, you know, not just show that they're a family off the court, but truly buy into it on the court. And they need to understand that it's about doing well and succeeding for you, the four other brothers that are out there for you in that family on the court for you. So that's very important. I think that needs to kind of translate over onto the court a little bit more, about being accountable to the five guys on the court.
All right. Well, I guess on that note, we got a couple of questions on Twitter. Matthew Denver at Friar Denver wants to know who we think will have the highest expectation for a breakout year this season. So who do we think? Fortune, Cotton, he puts in parentheses, dare I say Bancroft, ? So who do we think is going to have a breakout season this year, guys? If one player is going to shock us.
Well, I bet you Danny Mac says Bancroft because he wrote the autobiography for him. So.
I wouldn't say Bancroft, even though I would want to. Excuse me. But I mean, obviously, I think people are going to expect big things from Fortune because he's going to be the guy he's the only recruit that for this year that's actually going to be playing right away. So I think he's going to be the guy people are expecting the most from. And I think it's a little unfair, but I guess it's just what it is, because whether he likes it or not, he's pretty much the third scoring option on the team, or even you can even argue the second one at times. So that's pretty lofty expectations for a freshman coming in who was the by far the third best player in the class. But I think it's something that he's going to be able to do well in. I think he's a quiet kid, so I don't think he's gonna let it overwhelm him, and I think Ed Cooley understands that.
Okay, so Danny McNamara says Fortune. I'm going with Council for the simple fact that Vincent Council has the lofty expectations from Ed Cooley, who says he's the best point guard in the nation. And you know what? He's playing like it right now. Yes, he's taking a few too many shots now and then, but he is getting the assists. He's finding the open guy. He's not afraid to go fast break 2-on-1. He's not afraid to go up and get the easy basket. He doesn't want to stop and, you know, pull up anymore. I think that's a sign of maturity. Hopefully it continues. He doesn't fall back into some kind of the questionable habits. So I'm going to go with him.
All right, I'm going to have to cast my vote for Kadeem Batts. I think that he proved himself, you know, even with limited minutes and, you know, bruised up shoulders in the exhibition games. I think that he's matured a lot, both, you know, in mental toughness and in physical style of play. I think that we're going to be looking at that kid come March and being blown away by what he has brought to the table 1 year later.
And I'll tell you what, Danny, I hope you are right, for the simple fact that you and I, freshman year, his freshman year after being redshirted, he took so well to the training and the weight room, and he just his physical maturity. I really hope that you're right, because you and I had high expectations for him that first season. We had high expectations for him again. I actually thought he was going to be on the All Big East team and all this stuff. I really think, if he can kind of control everything until Siddiqui gets back, whenever that gets back, like you said, we have an update. I think that can really tell how the out-of-conference schedule goes for the Friars.
Yep. All right, next question. This comes from Mark Lynch at Lynch494. He wants to know...
Hello, Mark.
He wants to know what the deal was with Cooley's trip to Philly yesterday and if we have anything on that. I don't.
It's Brandon Austin. He wanted to go see Brandon Austin.
All right. Hopefully he's coming back with that news we talked about earlier then.
Brandon, and that was actually reported on Scout Friars. I don't want to take credit for that. But, yeah, it was to go see Brandon Austin. He's from Philly, and that's the end of it.
Nice. Well, there it is,
Cooley between those side trips.
Between what we talked about at the beginning of the show and that news right there, it sounds like it's going to be coming back with some good news from the city of brotherly love. So moving on from the Twitter questions, we got our three-game outlook. We got NJIT this Saturday, we got Bryant this coming Monday, and then we got our trip to the Puerto Rico tip-off with our start with UMass. So, guys... talk to me. What do you think we're doing? How do you think we're going to fare? What's going to be the keys to winning these games? What could go wrong for us? Go ahead.
Well, I think it's going to be a lot. Listen, if we lose to NJIT, we're not winning a game this year. That's my thoughts. So we better beat NJIT. I think we are going to. And I really think it's a great opportunity to really kind of flex our muscles a little bit and then have that, first game and let it count. The problem is you've had these guys kind of just – they've had the Mal Brown game. They've had these two exhibition games. These games don't count. Yeah, maybe there's statistics, and yeah, maybe Ed Cooley likes them, but they don't count. There's no true win and loss column. So get off to the right start, be 1-0 and dominate NJIT. Let's see LaDante Henton have a good game. I think we're not worried about him. Let's see your pick, Danny, Kadeem Batts. Let's see him dominate in the paint if he's healthy. Let's see Bryce Cotton if he's able to play this game. Let's see him do well. Let's see Fortune get off to a good start. This is a chance to have a good Saturday night before the quick turnaround when Bryant comes in.
Well, considering NJIT had a 51-game losing streak just a few years ago, I sure as hell hope we beat them.
I'm telling you, this is a good game to just kind of flex your muscles.
Yeah, but I think it's beyond that. This isn't even a trap game. This is just like walking completely in the dark off a cliff sort of game. If you do it, you're just screwed anyway. So basically... I don't think this is a good measure for our team. I think the Bryant game is interesting. Moving on to that one, I remember last year at the Bryant game, they had one player that was laughing at Cooley for about 12 to 15 minutes of the first half, until finally we were able to stop him and slow him down. But Bryant was just came to Division I like 2 years ago, I think. So that first year was. We beat them pretty easily, but last year it was close for a while, and I think this year it should be a much better measuring stick for the team than NJIT, because they're going to have players that can actually play.
Danny Mac, it's not about saying that NJIT is a measuring stick. I'm saying that it's a game that we can flex our muscles and know that when you win the game, it's going to count for something. That's what I'm really saying. Now, you're right about Bryant. Bryant had a 30-29 lead after the first half, and I remember my boss saying to me that he's one of the people that is kind of very close to the basketball program in terms of being an administrator, and he said I didn't go into that locker room at the halftime because if I did, I would have had to fire Ed Cooley because he was so upset with the players. And so 30-29, they came out and they were able to squeak it out. They scored 43 points in the second half and got to 9-2 at that point. They won 72-61. But you look at some of the guys, For Bryant, you had Alex Francis. He played 38 minutes. He had 17 points, 13 rebounds. I mean, you had some of these guys. I mean, the four of the five Bryant starters played 34 or more minutes, and those guys scored 11, 12, 12, and 17 in terms of points. They had some guys off the bench as well. So, and you have to remember, though, this was a Ron Gipley team. Gerard Coleman, it was 2 for 7 from the field that game. I mean, this is a different game, but I do think you're right. Bryant, now don't forget, Bryant's going to number one Indiana this Friday night. So that's going to – I want to see how they play out there. And, I mean, if they have any confidence from that game, then we might – you know, we might very well need to, you know, be on guard come Monday night at the dunk.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think the Bryant game, even though the game against NJIT – is on a weekend. I think the Bryant game, a good amount of students are going to go to, just because it's a closer opponent, and I think a lot of I know I see a lot of kids wearing Bryant stuff around campus, but I think the Bryant game is going to get a lot of people around PC basketball like really intrigued, more so than the NJIT game, and I think it should be a fun game to go to. Hopefully Akuli doesn't have to have one of those halftime speeches again. But like you were saying, it's a different team, different year. A whole year later, we've had so many more workouts, so many more practices. I think it's going to be an interesting game, especially hopefully we're not looking forward to Puerto Rico tip-off.
Well, they leave that Tuesday morning, so hopefully yeah. not.
Yeah, UMass is our first opponent.
And, Jesus.
You know, I got to call in and listen to a Puerto Rico tip-off press conference today with all the coaches and Dan Shoemaker from ESPN. And one of the big things that Derek Kellogg was saying was how glad he is to be playing Providence because they're only an hour and a half away from them, and he thinks it's a great, you know, natural rivalry, and both teams are on the up and up, both with what he's doing at UMass and what Ed Cooley's doing with us, and it kind of got me thinking that UMass and Providence really kind of had the same trajectory of circumstances from the 90s forward. I mean, you had Providence with Rick Barnes and then Pete Gillen, who was, you know, we got to the Elite Eight, we won the Big East tournament, we had some great players come through at that time, and then you had UMass, who, you know, Final Four, John Calipari's, you know, rise to stardom.
They didn't go to the Final Four, Danny.
Not according to the record books, but they still played those games. They still played at that arena. You know, you can't take that away from them. They still played there. And
the best player still plays on the Knicks.
Well, I mean, after, yes, you know. Christ. But, you know, after Gillen left and then after Calipari left, both teams started to fall off, and we had our deal with Welsh and then, you know, the travesty of Keno Davis. And, you know, now, you know, UMass had, you know, similar just difficulties trying to, you know, squeak out wins and compete in the A-10. And now, you know, you've got Derek Kellogg who is successfully running a running gun offense. So Keno Davis should be taking notes during this game. He should be watching UMass play and, you know, jotting things down on how to properly run a game.
I really hope there is no Victor Cruz on the basketball team for UMass. So this is going to be a long, long night for Friar fans.
It's going to be an interesting game. I think it's great. It's great that Kadeem Batts, when we spoke with him during that Providence media day, Danny, that it was great that he said he was looking most forward to the UMass game, and hopefully he plays well down there. But, you know, we've done okay. The last time we were down there in Puerto Rico was I believe it was the fall of 07. It was technically my freshman year at Providence, your freshman year at Merrimack. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a, you know, we played really well. We knocked off a ranked team, actually. I think it was South Carolina or Arkansas, I can't remember exactly.
Arkansas.
And we made all the way to the championship game. We lost to Miami. Miami's kind of been that thorn in the side for the basketball program, not just ours, but the women's as well. And I think it's just interesting. So do I think we're going to go, you know, 2-1 down there, 3-0? You know what? If we get one win, I'll be happy because it means that we were able to play a team because there's some really good teams in this down here. It's almost, you know, there's the NIT in the preseason and there's the Maui Invitational, but you could argue that Puerto Rico tip-off is either second or is arguably the second best tournament out there to play in.
If we have a chance to play NC State, that is a game that could get people really excited about the season.
I agree.
We're walking over UMass, but if we have a chance to play NC State and compete with them, that they could be better than every team in the Big East this year. So that game could really get things excited in Friartown. And I was just reading this thing you sent me, Danny, about the conference I had this morning. How Ed Cooley was saying how much he loves Puerto Rico, how he loves his platones and rice and beans, and so it's just kind of like a family thing for him. So he's going to have his family off the court and on the court, so hopefully that transitions well.
And, you know, this has to be great for them because this is the week before Thanksgiving. They get to come home. They kind of get to relax a little bit. They got Fairfield right after the Thanksgiving game. But I think it's a great chance for this team to kind of, like I said, kind of reiterate that family, go down there, enjoy themselves. Let's see what they have in them. I mean, I'm really excited. I think we should try and get as many Friar fans at McPhail's as we can. I'm sure they'll be showing the game there, and it's going to be on ESPN networks, you know, for the entirety of the tournament, whether you're in the loser or winner's bracket, you're getting some games, so you might as well take advantage of them.
Yeah, yeah. Or just watch the game in my room. McPhail's frustrates me at times.
Yeah. Well, it depends on what they're on, so.
Predictions, first three games, 3-0, 0-3, somewhere in between. What do you guys think? Go.
2-1. I don't think we're going to beat UMass.
Okay. Chris?
I'm going to say 2-1.
This team
I just really think NJIT is going to give us a run. I really do.
No, but in all seriousness, I don't think this team is going to travel well going down there this early in the season. I'm hoping I'm wrong, but I just don't think we're going to.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I don't think it's anything that. I don't think UMass is – I'm not saying UMass is a better basketball team than us, but I'm just thinking that I don't think we're going to go down there and play the type of game that Ed Cooley has seen us play and we've seen them play that day. So I'm going to go 2-1. But, I mean, and then after that, if NC State beats Penn State, we would have another tough game against Penn State right after that. So,
yeah, but that's where I think they get their win down there. I think they beat Penn State.
I think we beat Penn State.
Go ahead.
I'll tell you what. I think we go 2-1, losing to UMass, unless, and this is the Siddiqui Johnson news, unless things get cleared up with Siddiqui and we're able to get him, which right now it's sounding like there's a very good potential of that happening, where we could see Siddiqui Johnson playing in a Friar uniform starting this Saturday.
Well, we don't know exactly if that's going to be the case. What we can tell you is that there have been other cases in the NCAA where, you know, we had one guy, I think it was, what's his name, Des Miles, is that his name?
Yeah.
He transfers for family issues. He played a ton of minutes last year as a freshman, and now he's cleared to play this year. Siddiqui Johnson played 7 minutes. So there's still a chance. The phone is there. If it rings and it's the NCAA, Siddiqui Johnson could very well be suiting up for NJIT. Yeah. If not, you know, so be it.
Yeah, this guy does well as he transfers from Xavier after he got expelled amid sexual assault allegations, is now able to play. It just doesn't make sense to me. Even this whole thing stemming from the Ricky Lito thing, where people are being allowed to play or just suspended four games, six games, eight games for AAU, like, reaping benefits. But
we have some. I'll tell you what, guys. We have some clever Friar fans, because you got a couple Friar fans on both sides of the talk saying, you know, hey, all we have to do is you know, get these guys to recruit and then make them sit out the first 9 games, and then we'll be commended by the NCAA. I love that talk. I love that thread, and I also loved one of the people. I think it was on Friar Talk. He said at the bottom of one of the pages, it's just so ridiculous to think that these bigger state schools are being given the leeway in these bigger programs, but PC, who seems to be doing everything the right way, you know, for them to kind of just keep on saying, nah, you just have to just wait. So it's interesting. It's frustrating, too.
Yeah. And the thing with Siddiqui making the difference in the UMass game, I mean, the party don't start till Siddiqui arrives. So hopefully if he does go down there. That will not influence the team's ability to focus on the game at hand instead of the Puerto Rico nightlife. Not saying that this team is like that, but.
Yeah. No, good point. I will say, if UMass is vulnerable in one area, it's going to be their front court. They brought in two freshmen who are both very talented in their front court positions. However, if we can keep their guard play with Chaz Williams and, you know, whoever else, if we can just, you know, match that. We don't need to go wild and exceed it, but if we can match that, and we can have Siddiqui Johnson step up to the challenge and, you know, do what he needs to do, we're going to be fine and beat UMass.
Oh, I don't think they're better than us. I just don't think we're going to win.
Well, the problem is their depth is what we're going to have next year.
Gentlemen, guys, this is not going to be a blowout loss. We'll be in this game till the final minutes, and I'm, you know, part of me was so tempted to say we're 3-0 headed into playing NC State or whoever we would get. I mean, I absolutely think so, and I think in a couple seconds we're actually going to get the season predictions. So yeah. I'll let you know what we do.
We are getting the season predictions right this very second as we close out the long, long show, guys. Season predictions. What are we looking at for out of conference? What are we looking at for in conference?
I think we're going, I think 18-12 overall. 18-12 overall, and this is before the Big East tournament, so who knows. But 18-12, and I think I have us with, I had us 10-2. I had us 10-2 in the non-conference.
Losses to who?
Losses to UMass and whoever else we lose to. Down in Puerto Rico. I think we're going to beat Boston College. I know some people on Scout Friars think that we just, you know, we can't win up there. We're going to win up there. We have a strong following this year. We're getting together. The Friar Faithful alumni are getting together.
Terrible. They're terrible. They have no support up there with their basketball team anymore.
We're going to be 10-2, and then I actually think we're going to be 500 in the Big East for a little while, but then I think we kind of go to like 4-7, and then we fight our way to a, I believe my record was, I think I was being optimistic too, but I had us at 8-10. The very East could be 7-11. So I think right there, I think 17-13, 18-12, heading into the Big East tournament, and that's, of course, you know, listen, things change. This is without Siddiqui Johnson. This is without Chris Dunn coming back until the Brown game. So I really think we have a chance to maybe turn some heads.
Okay. Danny Mac?
Going off what I said, I don't think we're going to beat UMass. I think we'll also go 9-3 at a conference. I think Mississippi State's going to be a tough game.
We're going to beat them. We're going to beat them.
Yeah, we'll beat them.
I think 9-3 on the added conference, and then I'm going to go with 6-12 in conference. I just think towards the end or even the middle that similar to what happened last year at the end of the games, not having that depth is going to hurt us. And
I really think we're underestimating what this practice squad can do for this team. I really do.
I hope so. I mean, I really do hope so, but I think that we're definitely going to be in a lot more closer games than we were in the past few seasons. There haven't been that many nail-biting games that I can remember off the top of my head. I mean, the games to Marquette like 3 years ago at home, when Sherrod Curry was still here. Obviously, the games to South Florida, we lost that heartbreaker. Where Dominique Jones just went off. The game against DePaul was a close game last year. The game against Seton Hall 2 years ago, the horrible Big East tournament game with no defense at all, where Jermaine Peterson was just going off. I mean, those are the type of nail-biting games that I think we're going to see this year, which is exciting, which I think if we're getting these nail-biting games this year, there's going to be a lot of people really intrigued and interested in this team, which is a good thing. It'll get people steady in the games. It'll get people to show up early. But I think this is a very exciting team. But I just think another year of playing together and learning each other's tendencies and where everyone is on the floor and spacing and all this stuff just doesn't come together how we hope it does as fast as the Big East season. I hope I'm wrong, but I think we're gonna go down fighting, but it's gonna be a fun year. So I know my last year is an undergraduate year, so I'm hoping the lone senior council can do something. But
yeah, I remember that position with Marshawn Brooks. I remember that.
I know. I was with you on that, Danny. I really think that Council's going to play a lot different than what Marshawn Brooks did. And I think he's going to facilitate this offense. He's going to involve everybody. This is a different coach. It's a different team. It's a different practice squad. It's a different feel. Like you said, we'll be in every game. And I just think right now, you and I, in terms of looking at a few of those Big East games, I think in those final 2 minutes, we make a few more free throws. We make one or two stops. And I think that's what pushes us towards that record that I have us at. So, Danny James, go ahead.
All right. I think it's going to be depending on how we perform the second day in Puerto Rico. So,
okay.
Win or lose against UMass, regardless, the second day in Puerto Rico is going to be the most important day for us because this is a team with no depth who's going to have to play two very high intense games in a row. I think that we can go 2-1 in Puerto Rico. I think that if we beat UMass, we're going to lose to NC State. But if we lose to UMass, we'll win those following two games. But that's going to be dependable on how they play day two. I'm thinking 11-1 on a conference based on that. I think that the one game that's going to be a trap game outside of the Puerto Rico tip-off is Brown. And I'll tell you why. They got a new coach who has a much better style of play than Aguil did. And they are returning everyone from their team last year. They have talented guards. They are going to be competing for the Ivy this year. Based on just what I've read about them and what I've learned about them, you know, they're probably not going to be able to beat Harvard, but they are going to compete for it. And we're going to be playing them outside of our element. We're going to be playing them away. We're going to be playing them at the end after, you know, a long winter break, after a week off of no game from the BC game. I think that Brown could be the potential trap game of this out-of-conference slate. I think that in conference, we will probably go 7-11, maybe even 8-10, you know. But I will say there is one game that I think is going to be not a guaranteed win, but I think it's going to, you know, be one of those highlight wins. And I think that's going to be at Villanova. I think we're going to
I completely agree with that. I'm with you on that one. After Ed Cooley kicked that ball into the stands last year after that performance, I'm 100% with you. So you're right there with me. You're 18 and 12.
I don't think Villanova's a problem there. I don't think they're very good at anyway. I mean, they just had news today that their other point guard is transferring. So, I mean, we play them twice this year. Hopefully that's two wins.
Yeah.
I just think that I saw someone on Scout had us two wins over UConn. I know UConn's had issues, but
They're going to beat us at Storrs.
That's going to be an interesting game.
They're still pretty talented. They still have players. And
Not as many. Danny,
their depth is going to hurt them this year. They really don't have as many players as they have. You know, they depleted their entire front court and are basically replacing it with some German kid, Ashanch, however you say his name, Wolf, who barely got off the bench.
No, he's actually been playing pretty well
he's
for them.
Yeah.
He can shoot the outside shot. He actually looked really good when Kemba Walker led that team to the Maui Invitational win. He was actually a pretty decent player. So, I mean, I'm not going to take anything away. Yes, I'm a Connecticut resident. Yes, I have to listen to the King Jim Calhoun Bible every week. But I do think we split with them. I think we're going to be okay against Villanova. I think we can beat Pittsburgh at home. Marquette on the road, I'm not even watching. I'm telling you right now, I will not even give Buzz Williams the satisfaction of my unborn children. We are not going to win that game.
He's just going to bring out the buzzsaw. It's just as simple as that.
He will.
I think another game that people are slating as a win is DePaul at home, which blows my mind. That team, their fan base, their student base, they have just as big as, if not bigger, expectations than we do. They have two players that are flat-out studs and all Big East caliber players, and their point guard, Joe Young, and their wing player, what's his name?
He must be really good if you can't even mention his name. So, listen, it's going to be an interesting year, guys. I really think that we have a lot of upside. And like you said, Danny Mac, it's going to be a fun year. Danny James, I actually really like that Brown prediction. I hope we still win that game, and I think you do have us winning that game.
I do.
But you know what, Friartown, let the debating begin. And if nothing else, keep talking, keep rooting for the Friars. Get out there, get to the games. And let's see what we have going for the black and white. It should be a great year, guys.
Go Friars. No
All right, until next time, for Daniel James and Danny McNamara, I am Chris Torello saying so long on this edition of Friar Pod.
Go to Blake's.
Jesus Christ.